IR Simplified Podcast, episode 60. In this episode, I'll be talking about the ACTU's push to make casuals permanent after 6 months. I'll be talking about Lorna Jane's win with a harassment complaint and the need for a quick response by employers. I'll also give you some tips on how to build a rapid response industrial relations team. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Hello everyone, my name is Cameron Blewett. If this is your first time listening, it is good to have you with us. For everyone else, welcome back. Now, just to let you know, the IR Simplified podcast is produced every Monday, and show notes and an archive of these episodes can be found over at irsimplified.com.au/podcast/60. That is because this one is episode 60. Now, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider subscribing so you don't miss an episode. So, now let's get on with the show. And near the end of last year, the ACTU put their complaint out that they're going to be petitioning the Fair Work Commission or writing to the Fair Work Commission or whatever that these people do when they go and talk to the Fair Work Commission about having the awards changed to allow casuals to become permanent after 6 months. Now, as is expected to be the case, the Labor Party followed suit and said, yes, they'll consider creating legislation or changing the Act to do that. Now, the interesting part about this is that this Act, this potential to change that by the Labor Party, overrules the independence of the Fair Work Commission, who have set it down for 12 months. Now, when you have a look at the propaganda that's come out by the ACTU, for the reasons for this, they've been talking about what they call quote-unquote fake casuals. Now, this is the thing. Yes, there are fake casuals. We know that. I mean, I'm sure we've all done that those particular jobs in the past where you're just a permanent casual. You do. I mean, I can tell you one. When was it? Transport industry. It was probably a medium-sized firm. You can go in a casual because you love going casual because you get the substantially higher rate. Though the thing is, the job that I was doing upwards of probably about 45 to 50 hours a week. And this is the thing, you get no sickies, you don't get any times off. So with that regard, then yeah, you know, I think that there should be the compulsion for these people who are doing that to go full-time or to become permanent employees. Now, the other thing that the ACTU needs to be aware of, and that I think there is a bit of an ulterior motive on that, is that if you do go permanent full-time or permanent part-time from casual, you'll have a drop in wages. Now, we know that household budgets are stretched to the limit and all that sort of stuff. They're making the big song and dance about the reduction of penalty rates, about how that's going to impact. What do you think the reduction, and penalty rates were only weekends and public holidays. What do you think a reduction in the ordinary rate is going to have for those people who decide to take up that offer? But that's the thing. And I mean, personally, I think that, you know, there is a bit of a push to broaden the subscriber base or to reassert their relevance in the way things are going at the moment. I mean, hopefully, you know, I hope that the commission doesn't look any further any deeper into that or give it any more serious consideration than what it is. It's just a bit of saber rattling by the ACTU. Shame on the Labor Party for agreeing that they'll consider it. And we know that they're only doing that because they want to stop the hemorrhaging of supporters going to the Greens. And I mean, something that I don't think anyone's thought of when they've been talking about this in the ACTU, because all they see is potentially, as much as I don't want to say it, you know, union numbers and members of unions and all that sort of good kerfuffle, is that, yes, okay, let's say it does become law. After 6 months, a casual employee working 15 hours a week, 16 hours a week, has, you know, the opportunity to go and ask. If the business needs of the business can be met by that, then, yeah, I think that the business should put someone on as their permanent part-time, though the difference with that is that being permanent part-time, you know what hours you're working every week after that. So you might do, you know, you've got regular set hours, casuals, you could work 16 hours this week, 20 hours the next, and you could be working different days. So, you know, it's the thing, is that is it going to lead to more businesses outsourcing it, you know, putting on independent contractors and running the risk of going through the sham contracting thing? Is it going to put more people in using labour hire employees? Because, you know, it's the thing is, if you're on a conditional contract, which is part of, you know, the condition of ongoing work at this client, and then, you know, you have to be made permanent after 6 months, well, you know, what's the thing? Are you just going to be saying, no, sorry, you're only on short-term work, go and find a job somewhere else? So this is the thing. I really don't think it's been thought out of by the ACTU or the Labor Party, for that matter of fact. And then, you know, that being said, it's nothing new from that side of the fence. So anyway, that's a little bit of a waffle on that one. I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's going to be, you know, not going to be beneficial for either side of it. And hopefully it does fall over, that the that the Labor Party wakes up and decides that, yeah, you know, it's not a good idea. So anyway, as I said, that's about it for that one. Moving on to the next before I start another soapbox. Now, the next cab off the rank is talking about the $570,000 lawsuit that Lorna Jane, won the lawsuit because it wasn't proven. Now, this is the thing, is that a store manager of one of the stores filed a legal claim against Lorna Jane in around about 2015, seeking a bit over $500,000 in damages. Now, the former manager claimed that Lorna Jane was negligent and should be held responsible for her being bullied by a L&D manager at the company, and that this bullying in turn led to psychiatric illnesses and loss of employment and future employability. Now, it's the thing. Obviously, Lorna Jane came out, what did Smart Company say? Came out swinging against the claim, defended their actions. But this is the thing, is that any complaints that if any business owner, if they see something on social media that has the potential to cause stress or lead to a bullying complaint from an employee or anything like that, then what they should be doing is reacting straight away and either deleting it itself, if it's from a manager's account, you know, requesting that they delete it. You know, can you direct someone to delete it or not? That's a different kettle of fish. And all that sort of stuff. So, but I mean, this is the thing. It's that, you know, you need to respond to these complaints rapidly. You need to respond to anything that's up there, as well as having, you know, an adequate social media policy. Now, as much as I don't like policies, and this is one of the things, is that, you know, too many policies can be a bad thing, because then you take away the adultness, that's not a word, though, of the employer, and, you know, you start infantilizing them and, you know, creating and treating them like a child. So, I mean, essentially it could be, you know, one or two lines in a paragraph in a code of conduct document saying that on social media you'll treat all employees with respect and all that sort of stuff, or any, you know, anything that mentions the business will be done in a respectful manner or all that sort of stuff. Now, that being said, please remember the disclaimer that we all give you. This is not legal advice. This is only my opinion. This is, you know, being said for future discussion or to get engagement around these particular topics. So I'm not telling you you need to write down, you know, one or two paragraphs in your code of conduct. I'm just saying that depending on the particulars of your business and how your code of conduct is worded and all that sort of stuff, it may be something that can be covered off in that. Also depends on the level of responsibility and actions and all that sort of stuff that you put on your workforce. Now, going back to the, the Smart Company piece, it says that, you know, it's the thing, is that you do need to review your social media policies, that it doesn't matter the size of the business, it can be a small business, especially with the anti-bullying legislation, the way that it is at the moment, is that, you know, anything in the workplace. From memory, there was one about union officials, I think it was on a mine site or out that way, an employee complained about being bullied by delegates or something like that from the union. can't remember on it, and I'm probably not quoting it verbatim, but it's the thing is that whilst the actions did happen outside of work, so technically it wasn't, you know, bullying at work, there was still that they were done during work time, or there was something about it that, yes, it did constitute an act of bullying under the Fair Work legislation. Now, obviously, this one going to the courts, this one would have been done under whether it's health and safety legislation or something like that. I'm not too sure, but that was the thing. So this is it. So what takeaways are there? You know, make sure you let your staff know about proper etiquette or proper practices on that. You know, whether it comes down to, you know, running, you know, twice yearly training or refresher on things like that, just saying, hey, listen, you know, make awareness of codes of conduct or whatever policies you've got. And that's the other thing too with about all these policies. You can put them in place, but you need to make sure that your staff know about them, that they're aware of them and they're aware of their obligations. Just sort of saying, oh, well, hey, they signed the document when they started 7 years ago, so they're aware of it. Well, no, that's not good enough. I mean, you know, things could change. The policy could have changed. They could have forgotten about it. That's why if you have a look at most IT firms, they'll make a mention of it when you go to log in your computer, because by logging in, you're acknowledging that you'll comply with whatever the IT policy is of the organisation you're with. So anyway, but it's the thing is that you need to be proactive to everything. Get in before something happens. You know, we've seen that people are becoming a little bit more short-tempered, believing that there's an immunity or anonymity by acting on social media and things like that. So, you know, it's something that you don't want to be playing catch-up to. You need to sort of get out and, you know, be proactive to it rather than reactive. And all that being said, the same with the casualisation of, you know, casual employees and things like that. If you have any concerns about your current policies or the span of hours that you're giving casual employees and all that sort of stuff, please feel free to contact me over here at IR Simplified. You can do that by heading over to irsimplified.com.au/contact and fill out the contact form there. Or you can email me directly, which will be podcast, podcast, at irsimplified.com.au. There'll be a link to the contact form on the bottom of the show notes on here, which, as I said at the top of the show, will be located at irsimplified.com.au/60. Now, finally, just wrapping up this podcast, a bit of a quick discussion on something that is another little pet project of mine, and that is having a, you know, what I like to call a rapid response industrial relations team, and that how you should be able to build one. Now, you know, this is the thing, when you think about rapid response, you're thinking about all the SWAT guys and all that sort of stuff. They're running with the boots and doing the hot huts and all that sort of stuff. Now, that's, you know, essentially, yes, that's what it is, but then again, no, that's what it's not. What I mean by rapid response is someone that, you know, obviously your managers and supervisors should be engaging with your staff, talking to your staff, being aware of what's going on. So this is the thing, if your managers, you know, they hear of something that they have the concern or have an inkling that may relate to something bigger, you know, some bigger action short, you know, down the track, or it's a little bit of a spot fire that is starting to smolder a bit more instead of just being embers. You know, they've been fanned a bit, so they're becoming a bit more of a brush fire. You know, you need to find, or you need to have, whether it's a little part of the HR team or whatever it is. And then that comes down to the other things. Personally, I don't think IR should be part of HR. That's a completely different discussion again that I've had before, and I'm sure I'll keep having all the time. So, you know, just, you know, a couple of people there that can respond to these matters. So, you know, your managers send it up the food chain. It's come across this person's desk, so they think, okay, beauty. And they'll go and, you know, turn up to this location. If you've got a multi-site location, it's easy to do that. If you're only a small business, then you may not need a dedicated team. It could just be someone that's, you know, that's part of their library of responsibilities. And this is the thing, their job or their duty is to go out there to find out what the problems are and to take away the, you know, the trinity that, you know, what was it, the organising model that they use for union activism, which is the anger, hope, action. So you take away the anger. You don't give them anything to get angry about, because You know, this is the thing, when you're going in to agitate a workforce to take industrial action or recruit more members, all that sort of stuff, you do the anger hope action. You get them riled up, you get them angry about something. So if you're sending the rapid response team out there to, identify and to respond to any complaints or any grumbles that has the potential to get the employees angry about it, then you've taken that thing out of the equation. Because, just like a fire, fire can't breathe, can't live without oxygen, fuel and heat. So you take one of the three out, the fire no longer exists. The same goes with this anger, hope, action triangle. You take one side out of it and then they've effectively lost their power. Because if the members, the employees, haven't got anything to get angry about, then there's nothing that the official can do to come in to build their hope about fixing it and then taking action and all that sort of stuff. So this is the thing. This is what you need to do. You just find someone that can do that, that has the ability to quickly build rapport with the guys on the ground, the ones who are having the grumblings about things. And this comes back to what I was talking about in previous episodes about having someone that, knows how to talk their talk, has, gone through their experiences, dresses very, very similar or the same way that they do. So it's on, they're easier to open up to. And that's what it is. We need to have these rapid response things, and it'll stop half the troubles that are going on. Because you have a look at the dramas that are going on these days. It's all these big firms that someone somewhere has decided that they know better and they know what's going on, and then everything goes pear shaped after that. Now, I know it's not a laughing matter, and I'm not saying that the impact that it is having on the employees, those who are getting locked out, those who are going on strike and all that sort of stuff. I'm not saying that it's a laughing matter, but they've had to take that action. I'm thinking that, for me, it just, it's one of those things, frustrates me. Just have to shake my head and wonder, what were they thinking? The miners that have been locked out since September or October or whenever it was, obviously the company's got their reasons for doing that. It's just one of those things. I think that we need to get rid of this adversarial mindset, and it's something I've said all along, get rid of the adversarial mindset. And potentially one of the ways to do that is to potentially, I'll leave that little bit for another episode. I'll dedicate a whole episode to what I was going to talk about next. Now, I'm not going to talk about that one now. I'll write a note now and I'll talk about it in the next episode. Okay, I've written myself a note, so I'll talk about it in the next episode about this is what we should be doing and all that sort of stuff, and get back to everything the way that it should be. So just past the 18-minute mark for that one. I'm not going to waffle too much more, but that's the thing. If your company is big enough to obviously if you're a multi-site organisation, then it is big enough to have its dedicated HR team. I would be finding, whether it's one or two people out of that team who will be the rapid response union, rapid response industrial relations people, so they can go out and deal with any matter, respond to any matter, and hopefully, jump in, put the fire, stamp out the embers before they become the raging forest fire. So that's the thing. And one, as always, as I said, we're talking about the casualisation and the bully thing. If you want to know anything more about all this sort of stuff, feel free to send me an email, podcast@irsimplified.com.au, or an even better suggestion is to subscribe to the IR Simplified newsletter. Now, you're getting daily emails on ways to simplify industrial relations, and the one coming up next week is actually going to be talking about that bit of a suggestion on rapid response industrial relations team. So anyway, that's about it for this one. Nothing else that I want to talk about. So you have been listening to the IR Simplified podcast. Now, I'd love for you to make a comment on any of today's topics or to subscribe to the series. You can find us, as I said, at irsimplified.com.au/podcast. Now, once again, a bit of a shameless plug for the newsletter. So while you're over there, head on over to irsimplified.com.au/newsletter and subscribe. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/IRSimplified, or just simply search for IR Simplified on iTunes. Now, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'd love to hear what you thought of it. So if you have a moment, head on over to iTunes and give us a thumbs up, a review, or a rating. Now, it really does help myself know that I'm talking about content that you guys find meaningful, as well as helping other people find the show. So once again, thank you for listening, and I look forward to chatting to you again this time next week. Okay, bye for now.